This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The psalmist David said, "Judge me according to my integrity." Have you ever prayed such a prayer? Judge me according to my integrity. Well, what is integrity anyway? And what if integrity is compromised or destroyed in the context of an election? Will we be judged according to our integrity with regard to elections? Or is that something we really don't care about? We want to perhaps be a person of integrity, but when it comes to elections, no, there are some things that will supersede integrity, and that is the pursuit of power or my agenda or whatever it might happen to be. Today on Viewpoint, we're going to be taking a look at this matter of integrity, particularly integrity with regard to elections. And I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation as always with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And there have been efforts most recently to try to deal with this matter of integrity in our elections. In fact, the whole issue of integrity in elections had to do with what happened in 2020. 2020, you see, there was a big problem, and it resulted in what has been called an insurrection, which was not an insurrection, but it was a reaction to the perception that there was lack of integrity in a national election. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to be talking about not so much the January 6th event, not so much whether or not there was integrity in the election of 2020, but the matter of election and integrity itself. You see, election integrity actually says that the election expressed the will of the people. Not the will of some elites that are trying to control the people, not the will of a current government in power, not the will of a particular agenda, but the will of the people. You see, if we were to look at our nation does not consist primarily of a government. Our nation consists primarily of a people. In fact, the very first three words of our Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution, begin with the words, "We the people," in order to establish a government, to promote the general welfare, and so on. It's "we the people." We the people, that's you and me and all of us together, become the government. So it's been said that we get the government that we deserve. Do you agree with that? That we get the government we deserve? Well, that would be true if elections were carried on with integrity. In other words, every person got one vote, and their one vote was counted, not excluded, and no effort was made whatsoever to color the votes, or to buy votes, or to prevent people from voting, or to allow people to vote more than once, or to allow dead people to vote and count those votes. In other words, every legitimate vote of a living person who actually did vote was counted. You would then have election integrity. But what if that was not happening? Would we be getting the government that we deserved? Well, perhaps it would also depend upon whether or not we even wanted election integrity. Most everybody wants election integrity when it comes to their side, whatever their side happens to be. But do we want election integrity in its totality, in a pure form, whether it's Republican, Democrat, or disregarding Republican, Democrat, just pure election integrity? There have been a couple of bills that have been produced most recently concerning election integrity. For instance, this one, H.R. 90, the 118th Congress, Voter Integrity Protection Act. The Voter Integrity Protection Act. Well, that sounds pretty good. The whole idea was to impose penalties for people that were trying to allow illegal aliens to vote, among other things. If you're allowing illegal aliens to vote, then do you have election integrity? No, because the whole foundation for voting is that voting is limited only to citizens of the United States of America. That's the government. We, the people of the United States of America, that is the government. So, why then would 198 Democrats vote against a Voter Integrity Protection Act? 198 Democrats voted against the Voter Integrity Protection Act. Why would they do that? In fact, only 5 Democrats voted for a Voter Integrity Protection Act. You would think it would be universal, that every congressman would want to vote for a Voter Integrity Protection Act, wouldn't you? So there are reasons why people would not want to vote. And why is it that almost 100% of the Democrat Party voted against voter integrity? It tells you a story. It tells you that they don't want voter integrity. So what do they want? They want power. No matter how you obtain it, no matter how you have to distort, pervert, destroy, whatever you have to do through an election to gain and protect power. Is that what our country is about? Is that what you want our country to be about? Another vote, another bill had been produced by a Democrat, Mike Garcia from California. He introduced a bill to improve election integrity and security. Improve election integrity and security. He said in the bill, less than half of the American people have confidence that our elections reflect their will. And nearly 80% of Americans across both political parties are supportive of requiring photo identification to vote. He said, you deserve to have faith that American elections are decided in the voting booth, and that demands a more secure process. There's an overwhelming bipartisan consensus in our nation that showing valid ID should be required to vote. It's a common sense bill, he said, that would encourage states to implement that very practice. So he urged all colleagues, both Democrats and Republicans, to join the effort to better ensure our elections reflect the will of the American people. Well, you would think that that kind of thing would be virtually universally acceptable, wouldn't you? But why is it not? Maybe we should answer that question. Why is it not? We'll be right back, friends. This is Viewpoint.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
When we vote, we actually are engaging in what has been called a sacred trust. In other words, if the government is of we the people, then we the people have the opportunity to choose the government that we both want. And therefore, if that's what we want, then that's what we deserve. We get what we vote for. We get what we want. We get what we deserve as a people. So it's been called a sacred trust. Election integrity and the will of the people. We're going to be joined in the bottom of the hour by Jody Heiss. He has a wonderful book called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People, Congressman Jody Heiss, and he's going to be joining us. And I hope you'll look forward to that because he has been right in the midst of the battle for election integrity. But what is integrity anyway? How would you define integrity? Integrity is related to the word integer. The word integer, the integer one, is singular. In other words, there's no difference. It's just one thing. Unity. One thing. So integrity means that if you and I, let's suppose we're talking about you, for instance, you. If you are a person of integrity, that means that you, your life, what you say, what you believe, and what you do in all of its manifestations appear to be the same thing. Unity, one, an integer, integrity. Now, nobody is absolutely perfect in their integrity. Nobody, and that's why we're called sinners. On the other hand, we should be pursuing integrity because if we're not a person of integrity, we can't be trusted. Only a person of integrity can be trusted. It used to be said that a person who was a person of integrity, whose word was their bond, their life was consistent in what they said, what they did, what they believed, and so on, that person was deemed to be a God-fearing man. The problem with that phrase is that it hasn't been used for about 30 years now, maybe more. It's completely lost its import and its prominence in American life. So as we have lost the God-fearing man, the very concept of a God-fearing man or woman, we have also lost the fear of the Lord in our elections. In other words, we've had no check or balance in our elections. It was every man for himself, because power then became, the lust for power became the only thing that mattered. Not truth, not fairness, not justice, not accurate counting, not accurate representations, but power. And when power is gained, you know the phrase power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So the more that power is gained away from the people through the breach of election integrity, the more government becomes corrupted. And the more it becomes corrupted, the more corrupt it gets. And that's where we are today. Unfortunately, the situation has gotten so severe in our country that a Democrat congressman from California, nonetheless, has admitted that 80% of the American people do not trust their government and don't trust elections. And yet, it's a sacred trust. So if our elections are a sacred trust and 80% of us don't trust our elections, what does that say about how we have viewed and treated that sacred trust? We've breached the trust. How did we breach the trust? Why did we breach the trust? And where will that go if we don't bring correction? But to bring correction to a people and a government that has abandoned the love of the truth, that has abandoned the pursuit of virtue, that's abandoned the fear of the Lord, so that we only fear man now rather than God. Is it even possible? Is it even possible to regather the American people into election integrity? That's what we're going to have to talk with our guest at the bottom of the hour, Jody Heiss, Congressman Jody Heiss, with his book, Sacred Trust. Great book, very important. And he has been right there in the midst of all of these battles, particularly with regard to January 6th, with regard to the whole COVID thing that has corrupted our government in so many different ways, was used to corrupt the elections. Did you know that? COVID became the agent of corruption. Well, it was seized upon by those in power in order to corrupt election in the year 2020, the presidential election. So what we're talking about here is so serious. In fact, Ronald Reagan once said, the right to vote is the crown jewel of American liberties. But if the right to vote is not being carried out with integrity at every level, both locally and nationally in our governments, if the states are not together with election integrity, if your city is not in line with election integrity, if you are not in line with election integrity, and what about pastors? Did you know that pastors themselves have become the war horses of taking down election integrity, destroying election integrity in order to preserve agendas and power? Did you know that the pursuit of a contrary, supposedly to protect against racism, has actually become one of the major engines of destroying election integrity? It's amazing what people can do. So our guest today, in the entrance to his book, written by Ken Blackwell, says that sacred trust in our electoral system has to be guarded at all costs. So how do you do that? How do we guard election integrity? Well, we haven't been guarding it, obviously. And it causes me to think about what is written there in the book of Proverbs. It talks about guarding our heart. If we don't know how to guard our heart, then how are we going to guard our elections? Because the election, the vote, is actually a reflection of the national heart. The mind and the heart of the people, the will of the people. So if we're not guarding our own individual hearts, then we're allowing them to be corrupted. And if we're allowing them to be corrupted, then our very vote itself, the reasons why we vote, how we want to protect or not protect those votes, what we are willing to do to allow the votes to be compromised through whatever kind of devices are concocted by creative political sources in order to preserve and protect and gain power. It's a very difficult issue. And especially when we're faced with such amazingly toxic issues that are threatening our very national well-being. So many issues have become dangerously toxic, said our guest, to national well-being, and now these issues seem to infect every family in one way or another. So our guest says, and I'm bringing up what he says initially to set the stage because we only get 30 minutes with him. He says it's a frightful time in which we are living. A Christian congressman, it's a frightful time in which we are living. He said every issue we face is the outcome of decisions, and these choices are being made by leaders. Our system of governance allows the people to elect new public servants who can reverse or alter old decisions and correct the outcome of harmful consequences. But is that what we really want? Some say yes, but many say no. In fact, our country is so radically divided right now into so-called blue states and red states, and the blue states almost universally are supportive of breaking down voter integrity and protecting ways to destroy voter integrity in order to maintain and gain power. It's just, I'm sorry to say it, but it's just that way. The red states are more prone to try to protect voter integrity. If we're that divided as a people, if we're that divided in our hearts, where does that leave us? Where is the hope for the future? What can be done? Is there anything that you and I can do? What is our respective part in restoring election integrity? Well, I would say that one thing would be that we would have to revere the right to vote. In other words, God has, for some reason, made it possible in these United States of America for every person to have an import, an impact upon the very government under which they live. There's been no other nation on the earth that ever had that particular right. Only the United States of America had that complete right. So, what are you doing with it? If you're a Christian, what are you doing with the right to vote? Are you rationalizing that you don't want to vote because you can't find a perfect person? What you're really saying is, you're not a perfect person, which you well know, therefore you wouldn't vote for yourself, so why vote for anybody else, right? I mean, that's one way to look at it. But you know that every person is imperfect. Just look at our churches. So what we have to do is select the best people, people that if Jesus were present would vote, he would vote for. And why would he vote for them? Is it because of what they would provide? Or is it what they would do to protect the right of the people to follow the Lord with a whole heart in righteousness? You see, the interesting thing about government is that God never ordained government to do all the things that he called people to do. He ordained government to protect us against enemies, false and domestic, foreign and domestic. That's primarily the purpose of government, to protect us against enemies, foreign and domestic, which means there have to be laws to protect us against crime internally, and there has to be a force to protect us against the forces that would come from outside to attack us. But isn't it interesting? Have you thought about this? That it has been said over and over again that the only way that we as a nation could possibly be overcome is from the inside out. Not from a foreign enemy, but from the inside out. In other words, it's saying something about our integrity or the lack thereof. If we're a virtuous people, as our founder said was necessary for a free and free government, and for a people who would be doing God's will, then, well, we'd be in good shape. But if we're not a people of virtue and integrity, what kind of people are we, after all? We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section. God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Christmeyer. Friends, today we're talking about integrity. Integrity in our voting system. Our guest today, Jody Heiss, Congressman Jody Heiss, calls it a sacred trust. I agree with him. So if that be true, why is it that huge numbers of professing Christians don't vote? It's a travesty. It is an absolute travesty. And then complain. No, friends, it is our responsibility in a nation where we've been given freedom, freedom to choose. Under God, it is our responsibility to choose. And if you do not vote, you are choosing. Your lack of vote counts one way or another. It does count. So stand up, vote, and let your vote count. Again, our special guest today, Congressman Jody Heiss, joining us delightfully, and it's good to have you on board, Congressman.
Well, Chuck, I can't tell you the honor it is to be with you, and listen, what you just said, spot on, 100%. Thank you so much for having a clear voice to speak the truth to folks right now who are confused with what's happening in our culture, particularly as it relates to election for many Christians, and they feel as though their votes don't count.
But well,
we can't go there.
That's right, absolutely. And what you didn't know is that the first half of the program, in a most delightful but solemn monologue, I laid the foundation as a good trial attorney before the jury of our listeners here concerning the whole issue of integrity. It's almost as if the word integrity has no meaning anymore in American life. Have you noticed that?
Oh, goodness, yes. In my 8 years in Congress, I seemed like I saw it every day. You know, but there, at the same time as I say that, Chuck, let me tell you, there are some godly people in Congress, and there are others who may not be Christians, but they are individuals of integrity, and they are there for the right reason. They want to stand for the Constitution. They want to stand for truth.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we want to be careful not to throw a blanket over everyone, but overall, yes, I am stunned. I never cease to be stunned with the depth of depravity and the lack of integrity, both in individual lives as well as entire agencies these days. It's just a horrifying scenario, and unless this gets corrected, I don't see any good into it. But, you know, no good outcome, no positive outcome. But, you know, that's where the body of Christ is so critically important. That's where we come into the picture to make an enormous difference.
Well, there are those, Jody, who say, well, you know what, I can't find a perfect person. I disagree with this, I disagree with that, and each different person, I don't like what they did 20 years ago. I don't like what they did in their own life 20 years ago. Well, the problem is, if we were to vote on that basis, there would be what? Right now, I know of 6 or 7 mega church pastors who are already in deep trouble because their lack of integrity going back 10, 15, 20, and 30 years. And their ministries have gone under. It's defiling the body of Christ. And so if we're really looking for someone, people with absolute perfection, we're not going to find them, are they? Are we?
We're not going to find it. And so we've got to go
except for Jody, except for Jody Heiss, right?
Oh, no. Listen, God has redeemed me from so much, brother. Listen, I'm so keenly aware of that. But the bottom line, it is for that reason that you must look at what the parties stand for. Mm-hmm. And even the party platforms are not perfect by any stretch. In fact, this go around is more lacking than before. But what you must do is from that point, make a decision to choose the one and the candidate, whatever, that is most closely aligned with biblical values. And that's where you go. You can't look for perfection. You will never get it. So we are left then with the choice of going with that which is most closely aligned with a biblical worldview. And that becomes our responsibility to do.
You know, Moses' father-in-law there in the book of Exodus, I think it was Exodus 18, gave Moses some very clear instructions. It was as if they were given by God himself about how to choose representatives, because Moses couldn't do it all. He was only one man. So his father-in-law says, look, you're going to have to appoint people that are able to help, to assist. And then he gave a list of the things that were necessary for a person to be worthy of being so selected. And the first one was an able person, somebody who was truly able. Not because they had a big name, but because they were able. But then the next says he has to be a lover of truth. Where do you find those, Jody?
Yeah, that's where, listen, that is, again, why it's so critically important for people, for Christians to engage this. You know, I tell folks all the time, because this question comes up to me a lot, being a deeply committed Christian, a pastor prior to going to Congress and all this sort of stuff, people ask me, what place does faith have in politics? It has everything. Number one, we are called by Christ to be salt and light, period, regardless of what country we're in, mm-hmm. regardless of the environment in which we live. We are called to be salt and light where we are placed. But those of us who are here in America have a second sail, if you will, and wind to the sail, and that is that our system of governance does not work without involvement of the people. It is we, the people, that make this whole system work. And so we come to the table here as Christians in America with both a biblical mandate and a system that calls us to step up to the plate and get involved, a system that does not work unless we step up and get involved. And so the requirements that you're talking about that Jethro gave Moses is the same thing that applies today. We need godly men and women who understand the biblical mandate to step up to the plate and be salt and light and not cower under the political and moral and economic pressures of the day, but to step up to the plate and be salt and light. And here, to do so even politically is a system that doesn't work unless we do so. And I would end up just by saying this. God created politics. This is not a man-made thing. Three institutions that God created. There's marriage, the family, the church, and government. Those
right.
are the three institutions that God created. So this is not a man-made thing. God created government for godly people to be engaged in it for the good of society as a whole.
All right. So it's our privilege and our blessing here in the United States of America, like no other nation on earth historically, to have that privilege. And if we don't vote, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you know, I'm just one vote. Well, I remember, I think it was Edwin Burke who said, I can't do everything, but I can do something. What I can do, I should do, and by the grace of God, I will do. I think that ought to be more of our motto, don't you?
Absolutely, and I cannot tell you, it seems like more, perhaps this is not accurate, but it seems as though more often than it used to, in former days, we have a lot of close races. One of my dear friends, Bob Good, in Virginia.
Right here in Virginia, right here in our district, by the way.
He lost by 300-something votes. Out of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in the district, 750,000 people in the district, and less than, you know, in the ballpark of 300 votes, it matters.
That hasn't been resolved yet either, has it?
No, it has not been formally resolved. But look, when you start having recounts, it's an uphill battle, and I continue to pray for Bob. because he is one of those men of integrity and truth and biblical character from every perspective. But yeah, we have to pray, we have to vote, we have to stand. That's at the end of the day our calling.
All right, and you you were a pastor for many years. What is it that caused you to catapult into this almost God-abandoned foray called politics?
Yeah, great question, Chuck. And really, the bottom line, this has never been on my radar, politics. Now, I had always helped individuals get elected who I thought were worthy to represent us in whatever capacity, but never was it on my radar. But we had a couple of battles that came our way in our church family that we didn't go looking for, but they came our way. One was with the ACLU over the Ten Commandments. Our church happened to post the Ten Commandments in our local courthouse. The ACLU sued, and that became a nationally focused case. And I kind of, being the pastor, I became the face of it. And so that kind of pushed me out of the pulpit.
Well, what is it with you guys down there in Georgia? Are you guys just a bunch of troublemakers down there?
We must be. It was, we get accused of it all the time. But the second one also took on national focus was the Johnson Amendment. And that is what pastors can and cannot say with the from the pulpit without potentially losing the tax-exempt status or being sued. So I kind of became the face of both of those battles. And when our representative stepped down, retired, we just had people saying, please, would you consider running? And so that's ultimately how this thing got going. It was never on the radar. It certainly was not a personal ambition or something that that we strategized. It is just something that, quite frankly, God unfolded. But I will say this, to answer your question, how does a pastor end up in – I wasn't up there for 3 months, and I was ready to demand a recount myself. Like, surely I didn't win this thing. I demand a recount. Let's start this over.
In other words, I don't want to be in here anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, friends, here, the book, it's a hardbound book, Sacred Trust. You'll find our guest picture right on the front, Congressman Jody Heiss. And it's a $30 book, yours for $25. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling, and we'll get the book in your hands. Not only does it give a very wonderful expression of the journey that Congressman Heiss has engaged in from pastor into Congress, the world of politics, but also the primary focus of the book has to do with election integrity. He says there's one issue that singularly has the power to destroy America almost instantaneously. We're going to talk about that when we get back. Stay tuned, friends. Viewpoint does determine destiny. There are no neutral viewpoints out there. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint, friends. One issue that singularly has the power to destroy America almost instantaneously, says our guest today. The most frightful aspect of this threat, he said, is that if it takes foothold, America cannot recover. The glories of our past will be forever lost to the powers of a cruel world. And this is the greatest threat facing America, election integrity. Well, some might disagree with that, but certainly that is right at the top of the list, because if we don't get that one right, everything else falls, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And understand, I'm speaking from a political perspective, and
sure,
I make that very clear in the book as well, that the number one issue, the greatest danger, is we continuing to turn our back on God and biblical principles.
Exactly.
And our greatest need is a revival, a spiritual awakening. So, but from a political perspective, which was the realm in which I lived for 8 years, there's no question. I mean, at the end of the day, elections are not about who wins or who loses. Elections are ultimately about whether or not the will of the people was accurately heard and accurately counted.
Mm-hmm.
That's what elections are. It's the voice of the people.
Right.
And I may have my candidate lose a race, and I may be disappointed, but if it was a fair election, I can come back 2 years from now or whenever and try again to convince people to vote otherwise. But if the election process itself is tainted, then what can a person do? I mean, at that point, we have no voice. At that point, the ballot box is meaningless, and those who are going to represent us are not coming from the will of the people, but from whatever nefarious system that has placed them there. And so, yes, when it comes to the direction of our country, we have so many serious problems, so many issues. I mean, I could sit here and for another hour talk to you about major issues we're facing. But at the end of the day, those issues politically can be dealt with if we're able to have good, fair, honest elections and the voice of the people is accurately
right.
heard.
You know, I'm thinking back as you're chatting there. It was a number of years ago, USA Today, you find it in all the airports and so on, had on its front page in 3-inch high letters in green, believe it or not, in green, it was the word trust. And the whole gist of that emphasis there was that at that point, Americans were losing trust in all of our institutions. And it seems that that is the casualty of the breach of election integrity. Americans lose their trust. And that's why 80% are saying, even a Democrat congressman from California said 80% of Americans don't even trust their government anymore, don't trust their elections. That's a serious problem.
It is a serious problem, and it's inexcusable as well. I mean, but that points again to the need for Christians to step up to the plate and for them not to adopt this erroneous, false mentality of separation of church and state, that somehow my faith has no place in politics, that nothing could be further from the truth. And yet we have heard that over and over and over and over to the point that many Christians have bought into it and believed it themselves.
Well, the reality is that politics is not just what we think it is in terms of something going on in dark rooms, smoke-filled rooms, and so on. At the root of it, politics has to do with the word polity, which has to do with just getting
exactly.
along with one another.
Exactly. And I tell people that all the time. Politics is about policy. It's not about a person, as you were talking about earlier. You don't even get around to, I like this person, I don't like this person. It is, what kind of policies does this individual stand for? That's what comprises the makeup of politics, and that's what we have to keep in mind. But it is corrupted when you have corrupt people who are overseeing and making the policies. And it is for that reason that the issue of integrity becomes a major item of concern for all of us to elect individuals of integrity, because at the end of the day, they are the ones that we are entrusting to produce policies under which all of us will live.
Well, let's talk about some of these policies with regard to voting itself, because normally we have an entire hour for you and I to talk, and now we only have a half an hour here, so I tried to lay a foundation for a lot of this before we ever came on the air. But you have an entire section toward the end of your book called Principles of Securing Elections, and I want to kind of run through a few of these and And then we'll pick two or three and see where it goes. Accurate voter files, mail-in ballots, suggestions to clean voter files, legal voters, voter identification, secure ballots, voting machines, and handling ballots, distribution of absentee ballots, and on it goes. Elon Musk just came out the last few days and said, we've got to get rid of voting machines and have paper ballots. What say you?
I say thank you, Elon, for reading my book, I guess. But, no, listen, the problem with voting machines is what you just referred to on that USA Today paper, trust. People have lost trust in the machines. And if trust is lost in the voting machines, then people don't feel confident using them.
All right, so what is it about the voting machines that is untrustworthy?
Well, it depends on what state you're in. Of course, according to
how about the state of misery?
Yeah. According to the Constitution, the time, place, and manner, which includes voting machines, of voting is left up to the individual states.
Right.
And so it varies from state to state. But, I mean, overall, probably the greatest concern that I hear is that people feel like they can be hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel as though they don't record an accurate vote.
Or they can be set up contra to what you would expect the voting machine to do and actually record one vote as another vote.
As another vote. And, you know, there seems to have been a lot of people that have been able to do that with these machines, again, depending on what state. But that kind of stuff is what creates all sorts of lack of trust, as mm-hmm. well it should.
Right.
If we're going to be using machines, they must be verifiable and accurate, and there must be accountability to verify every single vote is exactly the way the voter intended. For instance, in Georgia, we have machines that print out how we voted. And so we do it by machine. The machine records the ballot, records the vote, and then we get a printout of how we voted. All right, well, that's good and fine, but Georgia does not do this second part that I believe is extremely important, and that is to verify the printed vote outcome versus the recorded one that the machine did. They should be identical. At the end of the day, every single printed ballot, whatever the numbers for this candidate or this policy or the other, ought to be identical to what was reported in the machine. That's verifiable. It ought to happen. It does not in our state, but it should.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a machine, there must be a way, if you're going to have trust and confidence, that the vote that was recorded on the machine is verified by a paper printout, and they should be identical 100% of the time.
Well, you all down there in the Georgia peach realm didn't have exactly a Georgia peach 2020 election, did you?
We sure didn't. No, and fortunately, our General Assembly has come forward, and they've made a lot of good changes. With one of the big issues we had was the drop-off boxes. That was not the only one, but that was one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
We had the mail-in voters, mail-in ballots was another massive problem in Georgia. We typically will have a couple hundred thousand on an election. A couple of years ago, we had 1.4 million of them. And COVID was the excuse. We just started sending out these opportunities for people to vote by mail to everyone on the voter file, which is another problem.
So, in other words, COVID was seized upon to corrupt the election in 2020.
No question in my mind. And I deal with this in the book. I was honored to serve on the Oversight Committee. And when we had, Chuck, our very first case of COVID in the United States, in Washington State, very first case, the next week, we had an oversight hearing led by Democrats on the need for us to reform election laws because a pandemic is coming and people are going to be fearful to go to the ballot box or unable. We need to send out ballots to everyone on our voter files.
Sounds like Rahm Emanuel was getting into the act again to seize upon every possible moment to change things that otherwise couldn't be changed.
Well, exactly. And it was at a time when we only had one case. It was like no one knew what this was going to lead to. While everyone else was asking, what is this one case potentially going to be mean to me or my family or whatever, the Democrats immediately started pushing for election reform. And we had one hearing after another, week after week after week after week. And soon COVID became the excuse, the springboard to nationally alter election
integrity
across the entire country. And it happened not by bypassing state legislatures. Mm-hmm. More often than not, it happened by a secretary of state or governor or whomever oversaw the elections in those states, and they unilaterally made a decision to alter their election processes, bypassing the legislatures of those individual states.
Recently, you all there in Congress, notice I'm using some Southern Georgia talk, y'all there in Congress.
I understand that perfectly.
you decided that you were going to enact something that would help to preserve voter integrity. But my understanding is that 198 out of 203 Democrats voted against it.
Yeah, and that happens all the time. You're talking about the voter ID.
Why would they vote against it?
That's my point. Who in this world would be opposed to an individual before they get a ballot that they prove that they are who they say they are and that they are a legally registered voter? The only person in my mind who would not be in favor of that is a person who does not want integrity in the process, and they just want ballots out there, and they want to be able to collect as many ballots as they can. But this is one of the essential elements that must be protected, is photo ID. You got to be able to prove who you are.
And well, you have to prove it in every other situation. Every other situation. So Absolutely. Why would that not be desired in voting? Because they don't want integrity. They want power, but they don't want integrity. Okay. How about early voting?
Yeah, I think early voting poses a problem. The more days you have for voting, be it before the election, in some states after the election.
Unbelievable.
The more days you have, the greater potential there are for problems. We have a voting day that, and listen, I get it. It's difficult sometimes to make a specific day. But if we went back to a single day, I think that would eliminate a lot of potential fraudulent activity to take place. There are excuses. For example, we have military. We have people who are in hospitals. We have people out of the country. There are legitimate reasons where people may need a mail-in ballot because they're not going to be present on a day of the election. I get that, and that's fine. There should be provisions for those type of circumstances. But I would love, and it'll probably never, ever, ever happen, because we've become a society that loves convenience rather than security of election process. And it is more convenient to vote a month beforehand whenever it suits my schedule. But look, our founders did not give us convenience when it came to voting. They were focused on accuracy. Yeah. If ever there was a time for convenience, it would have been back in the days where you had to travel miles and miles and miles by horse or by foot to get to a voting precinct. But they didn't do it. They gave one day. I would love to see us go back.
I would love to go back to that as well. Congressman, thank you so much for standing in the gap for all of us. Yes, indeed, our vote is a sacred trust. We need to see it that way. Christians need to see it that way. And I appreciate so much what you're doing there. Friends, the book is Sacred Trust. It's a $30 hardbound book about election integrity and the will of the people. Go to our website, saveus.org. You'll find it there for $25. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries. Become a partner, friends. Do it today. You know, time is running short. Things are difficult. Let's get on board.
Listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Christmeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.